Good morning. Meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any questions, corrections, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of May 4th, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Committee members, we have one bill today. That is House File 3549. The chair will move that House File 3549 be referred to the General Register. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving the bill. Members, I think we have a pretty important bill and important discussion in front of us today. I think many of you, if not all of you, have probably had similar circumstances on our caucus night here, excuse me, in Minnesota, where, you know, it was one of those things. As I was approaching Blaine High School for caucuses, there was a massive traffic backup, and I was actually kind of frustrated. I'm like, well, what did I miss that's happening in Blaine tonight? That is causing such a massive traffic backup. Don't people know caucuses is happening? It turns out they did. We had folks parking blocks and blocks away, folks walking upwards of almost a mile to get to the high school to what they thought was voting for their nominee for President of the United States. We had a lot of folks coming in and saying, well, where do we vote? Even as we were walking in, folks were walking out of the high school because they didn't realize that they were going to have to sit through caucuses. We had reports all across the state where folks were showing up at 9, 10 in the morning saying, where do we vote? And we have a situation where right now, I think with all of the incidents that we went through on the evening of March 1st for caucuses, shows that Minnesota is ready for a presidential primary. We still keep the caucuses. I think that that's important. Have those folks that are interested in being a part of the Minnesota Republican and Minnesota DFL caucus and parties and are interested in growing the party structure and the grassroots and being involved, and that's extremely important. But we also have a lot more individuals that are very keen on choosing who their party's nominee will be. And we don't have a...
Representative Mahoney?
Sensing a habit here.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question here. This does not look to have a fiscal impact until 2019.
Yes, that's true.
So as this is kind of a ways and means and deals with the budget, maybe you can explain to me why we're hearing the bill. I think it should just go straight to the floor as is.
Well, Representative Mahoney, if you look at the rules, the Ways and Means, the purview of the Ways and Means Committee is basically present and future obligations of the state. So this would not be something in this biennium, but it would be something that is a potential future financial obligation of the state. And so that's why it would be here.
And so that goes out, and this would be a fiscal impact in 2019. So Ways and Means would have four-year plus impact? Interesting. Okay. I just don't understand why we're – hopefully we don't get too deep into policy. We're just getting into the fiscal note of it, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Mahoney, yeah, if you look up – if you look underneath, I think it's Rule 4.03.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it talks about both present and future financial obligations. Okay, sorry for the interruption, Representative Sanders. Please continue.
No worries, Mr. Chair. And actually, I was just segueing into that discussion, Mr. Chair. So as we are ready to move into a presidential primary, I had a discussion with Chair Knobloch earlier in the session. As we started discussing things with the Secretary of State's office and local county election officials and those that would be hosting elections all across the state, we begin to see that in some cases they could be upwards of three elections that some jurisdictions will be putting on, and that is a substantial cost for a lot of counties. And so in talking with the Secretary of State's office, we decided that there should be some sort of reimbursement for that, and particularly the presidential primary, that we would reimburse those local election facilitators. And then in speaking with Chair Knobloch, you know, it's like, well, that cost, as we just discussed, is about 4 years out. How do we deal with that? How do we, contemplate that? And that's why we're here this morning, is to have some of that discussion. But members, I think Minnesota is ready for a presidential primary. I think overall the cost is relatively low, especially when you look at the cost being once every 4 years. And I think Minnesota is ready, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Mahoney and others, I misspoke. It's Rule 4.10 It's Rule 4.10 subsection A. Yes, that has it. So anyway, if you want to get into that more, look at 4.10. Representative Mahoney, did you have another question?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were waving your hand.
Not this way.
Representative Sanders, do you have any other presentation on exactly how the bill works in terms of the primary and such?
Mr. Chair, I certainly can go through that. The Secretary of State is also here this morning. We can walk through that. I guess it's up to you and your members on how deep we want to go into the functionality of the presidential primary, but we certainly can if that's what the committee wishes.
Well, I think that you probably should, Representative Sanders, because I know there is an amendment that deals with that coming up, and so I think that people should be informed about the way the bill works and how the primary would be conducted so that then they can cast a more informed vote when it comes to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I certainly can do it, but I think we have someone here that's a little bit better at testifying on election policy. So with that, I'd invite Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon.
All right.
Who?
Well, Secretary of State Simon, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Great to be here with you. I appreciate it. And members, just so you know, I guess I would say this about the bill. It's like any other election. So I think Representative Sanders and Senator Rest in the Senate took great care to make explicit in here that that this is not disturbing in any way existing election law. So I'll give you an example. As with any other election, well, the two other statewide general elections, the August primary and the November general, there would be here a 46-day absentee ballot period, for example, just like any other election. So this is plugging a third election. There are now two. This is plugging a third into the existing sort of framework. So really there's less here than meets the eye in that sense. So I'm happy to answer any specific questions, but that really is it in a nutshell. So it's no different than any other election we have in that respect.
And Mr. Chair, specifically, we have right now the presidential primary is pegged to the first Tuesday in March, but the party chairs can agree on a different date if they both can agree. If very similar to caucuses right now, if they can't, then March 1st or the first Tuesday in March would be the presidential primary, so it would have been March 1st this year.
Secretary Simon, can you talk about, I mean, will there be same-day registration for this primary? Can people basically choose which primary to vote in, no matter which primary they may have voted for and which party they may have voted for in the past underneath this primary, or is this at all different from the current primary system we have?
Mr. Chair and members, as to the first part of your question, yes. Those other things, like being able to register same day, again, this doesn't disturb those other benefits that exist in election law right now. This just plugs it into that existing scheme, I guess. And so so the answer to that question is yes. In terms of how it's different, that's sort of a substantive issue that I would certainly defer to the author. I'm happy to discuss it since you asked question of me, but I defer to the author whether he wants to discuss how it's different from the August primary.
Representative Sanders.
So right now, Mr. Chair, in the bill, what would happen is you would walk in, and after registering, once you're eligible to vote, you would choose a ballot. Right now, we only have two parties that have major party status in the state of Minnesota. So you would choose one of those two ballots. It would be recorded whether you choose the Republican or the DFL ballot, and you would vote. Just like any other election, you would throw it in the tabulator and get your I voted sticker and walk out the door.
So Representative Sanders, the first time we conduct a Republican presidential primary, a person could show up at the primary and say, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, and they would get that ballot, correct? Or do they need to register earlier than that and declare themselves to be a Republican or Democrat?
Mr. Chair, this would be what would be considered kind of a hybrid, leaning closed primary. So you do need to choose which party ballot you would prefer, and more or less right now the language in the bill says that you more or less agree to the principles of the ballot that you are choosing, and then you are eligible. You take that ballot, and then again, once you're eligible, you throw it in the tabulator just like normal. So the difference right now between a current primary and the language in this bill, and again, this is only for presidential primary. This does not affect other primaries or general elections. You do choose a Republican or a DFL ballot and vote. That is recorded. Who you vote for, you know, anything beyond that is not recorded. But it is not as closed as having to register as a Republican or register as a Democrat to vote in the primary like some states have. But it's also not a fully open primary as well, where you, for instance, right now we have in the August primary, hopefully June, coming soon, where you walk in, grab a ballot, and you can vote either way. You just have to stay in the same lane. You can't cross over. So it's kind of a hybrid approach, you know, as we try and figure out exactly how to move forward.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and great to see the Secretary of State here. This may be a question for you, Mr. Secretary, or the author, but you had mentioned that this doesn't affect our existing law, and that's great. But how would this work with absentee voting? Because, you know, one would have to, I assume, request a particular ballot ahead of time and then make some kind of affirmative statement then ahead of time regarding party preference. Is that how it works?
Secretary of State Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, yes, that is how it would work. It would be the same absentee ballot period, 46 days, and someone could request a ballot and they would get that ballot. Presumably they could do it in person, they could do it online, and then that ballot would come to them by mail.
So just to affirm, Mr. Chair, that they would then have to make this affirmative, either DFL, Republican, or if there's another major party, they would have to make that affirmation at that time, correct?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, yes, and I think Representative Sanders has taken care to craft language in the bill that makes it, you know, fairly open. I think it speaks of, and I don't have the precise line in front of me, and maybe Representative Sanders does, but basically speaks of general agreement with the party principles. And, you know, to be honest, there are no sort of principles cops out there that are, you know, roving the streets to see whether someone, you know, truly is or isn't. But it does set, but to be on a serious note, and I think Chair Martin, and I don't know if Chair Downey is here, he was at the last hearing as well, might have something to say that exists in part because of the national parties. Both of them actually require that kind of language in most situations. And I think Chair Martin could speak to this. There was a hearing in the Senate last Friday where both of them testified that their respective party rules at the national level require some assurance that someone isn't causing mischief, which we could all imagine by folks on one party going to, in an organized way, vote in the other. So,
correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some questions on the numbers, but since you've been talking about the other components of the bill, I did want to ask some questions for both of you guys. Representative Sanders, you've mentioned that the vote is recorded. I'm assuming then you take the person's name and you say that they voted on the Republican ticket or the Democrat ticket. So then what happens to that data after that point? How is it maintained? How is it disseminated to individuals that are interested in accessing it and so forth? And what is the time frame for that?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Anderson. It's my understanding that, you know, it's, and I'll let Secretary Simon kind of complete the circle here, but it's my understanding it's recorded much like the absentee ballot, if you voted absentee or not, is recorded right now. That information is collected by the Secretary of State. So it is recorded whether or not you took a Republican or Democrat ballot through the Secretary of State's office.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Secretary of State, if you could, if you could explain to me the time frame in particular, because I know in past there have been different groups that have been unable to access the information in a timely fashion, especially when it comes to the absentee ballots. So from your office perspective, what is the turnaround time going to be? Are you going to establish in your office policies that the turnaround time for this data is going to be made available to the public? So if you can help me out on that.
Secretary Simon.
Yes, thank you, Representative Anderson and members. This would be, and just to amplify what Representative Sanders said, this would be part of the SVRS system, the statewide voter registration system, just like all of this data. And I assume that we would continue to, there's nothing in statute that gives an exact day, but it would be as soon as possible. And so my commitment would be here into the microphones that as soon as possible means as soon as we can, practically speaking, possibly make this data public. We have a very good working relationship, for example, with all political parties, not just the two major parties, but the minor parties as well, because they naturally want and need and depend upon this data. So particularly this year, we're in constant communications with the parties. I take it you're speaking about relationships with other groups, but we really try to get that information certainly to the parties and to the public as soon as we can, and that's my commitment to continue to do that.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, if you want, I can go to the financial questions that I have. I don't know.
Sure. Why don't you do this as long as you've got the mic?
I am particularly interested in the fact that this is going to cost money out of the general fund. And as I understand it, the Senate is has put it into the base budget for your office. And so obviously, as Chair of State Government Finance, that impacts the budget that I'm responsible for. This bill did not come through state government finance. So how do you rectify those numbers? In particular, I see $111,000 as state costs. That's just the estimate at this point. But then also on the reimbursement portion of the bill, if you look on page 8, you've left blanks on there, even though the fiscal note has highlighted probably around $3 million of reimbursable expenses. Why leave this blank? And then, again, how do you rectify that this is coming out of state government finances budget and that the Senate is putting it as part of your base budget?
Secretary Simon.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that's a good question. I will I really leave to the author and to other legislators the issue of why there are blanks in the bill. That's really a legislative prerogative. But in terms of, if you're asking about the money and why the Senate chose to put it in the base budget, I think the idea here was to treat this, and the counties seem to agree, much like the Help America Vote Act funds or the HABA funds that came through after 2002, where the Office of the Secretary of State was basically the pass-through entity, where that money resided with the Office of the Secretary of State, but then went out the door again in the form of reimbursement. Same thing here. I mean, we would hold the money, but we would be the agent, just like the Help America Vote Act funds that just ran out in the last couple of years. That's the way this would be treated. It's something that the counties and the townships and the cities are familiar with because it just happened within the last decade. So that was the decision. So it's not really going to us. It isn't going to us. We are holding the money, and then we'll process the reimbursements pursuant to the statute that you pass, if you pass it. But I really leave to representatives and others the issue about its legislative path or why there are blanks in the bill. That's really a legislative prerogative. But we'll do whatever you ask. And in terms of the money here, you can see in the back page of the fiscal note on page 6, these were the numbers we crunched in terms of the cost to the locals. And I guess, if anything, one of the things that I've been saying is if the legislature does this, to just do right by the counties and do right by the cities and the townships. After all, they're going from 2 to 3 elections. They're basically upping their elections responsibilities by 50%. It's in the winter. They've got to hire and train and retain election judges. It really costs money. And I've heard no disagreement so far in terms of the amounts or paying the money, but it's certainly but I certainly understand the question about this sort of pass-through arrangement. this is just modeled on what has been done in the recent past.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson.
For Representative Sanders, I mean, this did not come through state government finance. It obviously will have fiscal implications for the state government finance budget. Even though you put them out in the tails, that's still something that it needs to come through that committee. So can you talk to me about the cost of the state of about $111,000 and then the pass-through, making Secretary of State the pass-through entity for the $3 million estimate of costs to reimburse to the local communities, and then why you left it all blank here in the bill itself?
Representative Sanders.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I would say the big question that I had in discussing this and why I reached out to Chair Knobloch is how do we account for money that isn't used up in this biennium or technically even the next? And those are fiscal implications that will have to happen now, you know, 3 and 4 years from now. And so the Chair of Ways and Means said that this was more of a Ways and Means discussion. Again, I'm always happy to move bills through the process. If it's something that we need to discuss more, that's fine. As far as blanks in the bill, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now about, as the Secretary mentioned, the HAVA funds running out. And, you know, we are borderline facing a crisis right now of replacing our elections equipment across the state. And there's also been a lot of new developments in technology. And I think that part of the hope is that some of this, some of the costs can hopefully come down over time. The real problem is we don't know exactly what it will cost. I think this is kind of what we hope is the ceiling, you know, but these financial questions on the precise numbers are, you know, something that will be dealt with, you know, about 3 years down the line. We just wanted to make sure that, you know, as we're moving this policy forward, that we are having these contemplative discussions and understanding that there will be some costs, albeit I think fairly minimal, but there is just no real way to know what those costs will be 3-4 years from now.
Well, Representative Anderson,
thank you.
Know, in return to the in regard to this issue of the jurisdiction, I think, you know, when Representative Sanders and I talked about this, was a long time ago, I think probably before we had a fiscal note. This bill, in referring it to the General Register, will automatically be kicked out to rules, and I think probably it would be appropriate then for the Rules Committee to decide if they felt it should go to state government finance at that point or if it should just go on to the General Register. And so I think that we can talk about that more, and I think we should talk to Majority Leader Pepin about that. But this will be something that is, while it's being referred to the General Register, essentially will go to rules after this. And I guess I don't recall if you're on the Rules Committee or not, but I think maybe that's where that decision should be made.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's a reason that we have committees, and there is a reason why we give committees budgets. And I know that as the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, you asked us as we were putting together our budgets with the target that you provided us that we also report to you any tails that we would have as part of our budget. This bill did not come through the State Government Finance Committee at all. It has tails for the state government finance budget, and if we go the route of what the Senate has, they actually put it into the base budget for state government finance. Mm-hmm. So obviously this has an impact for state government finance. This bill should come through that process, and as part of the proper referral process, as somebody having had to do that job at one point in my life referring bills, this bill should have gone to state government finance, and it never did. And I do not serve on the Rules Committee, and I would hope that they follow the proper procedure. Otherwise, you can see where any member here that has a bill can bypass the committee that is responsible for that budget, whether it is property taxes or higher education or maybe even a bonding project that could be bypassed and just go straight to Ways and Means, and then the Rules Committee sends it on. If that's the case, then we start a new process where we've decided that we don't really need committees and that we only need two, Ways and Means and Rules. If that's the route that people want to go, I'd like to know. But if they don't want to go that route, I think that we need to, you know, abide by the proper committees that we put in place.
Well, Representative Anderson, let me just say, I guess first, I had nothing to do with the path that the bill was on prior to this, and I'll be happy to talk to the majority leader with you about the bill, presuming it passes out of here and gets to the Rules Committee. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the relationship between this proposed legislation and the delegates that go to our national conventions. Does this address whether or not these votes will be binding or not?
Mr. Martin, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ken Martin. I'm the chair of the Minnesota DFL Party. Chairman Downey wasn't able to be here today, but as was referenced earlier, both he and I testified in front of the Senate committee last week on this same bill. To your question, both parties do have in their own rules right now a requirement to bind the election of delegates based on the current presidential preference ballot at the caucuses. What this proposal would do would remove that presidential preference ballot and have that election conducted by the Secretary of State, the results of which would still bind the election of our delegates at subsequent levels, both at the congressional district and state level. So all delegates will be bound by that statewide result.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then how does that relate to the superdelegates?
Mr. Martin.
Well, on the Democratic side, superdelegates are unbound, and that is a national party rule. And as such, they're not bound by the result of any statewide election. These are members like myself, elected members of the party, Democratic National Committee members, and our elected officials, our federal delegation, congressional members, the governor, the two senators, etc. They are not bound by the result of any statewide election, and that is a national party rule I'm not sure if you decided to bind that here, I don't think you could bind the election of unbound delegates. It's only the election of delegates themselves by the congressional district and state convention.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this legislation binds delegates, but not all delegates. Is that bottom line?
It binds the pledged, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. It binds the elected delegates, the pledged delegates that are elected by the caucuses, or in this case, the presidential primary. Now, both parties are not equal here. The Republicans, I believe, do not have a similar system of superdelegates. And so they do have some unbound delegates, I believe. I can't speak to that process. I can only speak to the DFL. We have 16 delegates of the 93 total delegates that we are allotted here in Minnesota are superdelegates. 77 of them are elected by the people through the caucus process at conventions and the congressional district and state convention.
Representative Carlson. Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I have a comment on the discussion earlier about open and closed, and I was part of an earlier discussion about the presidential primary, and I was trying to search for a term because I don't think that the process that is in place here really is a closed primary as I would define it. And Representative Sanders, you said leaning closed. I could have just as easily used the term leaning open, because you can make that decision on election day. And I think that the term closed may lead people to a kind of a misunderstanding as to what the process really is. And maybe we can search for a different term. Or if I were engaged in the debate, I think I would say leaning open. But at any rate, I'll leave it up to the author and maybe the party chairs as to how they might choose to define that. Because when I look at other states, closed primary to me generally means prior registration, and sometimes that can be several months, or you have to declare your political affiliation before you vote in a primary. And here we're going to be able to do it, as I understand it, under the bill on election day. So that's more a comment than a request, unless somebody wants to address that. my real question is the fiscal one. And I understand from earlier discussions that the counties are a little bit nervous about the language in the bill dealing with a proportional allocation of the reimbursement of funds in case there isn't enough money available when we appropriate for the primary. Then there's an allocation based on previous elections, as I understand it. I understand there was an amendment offered in an earlier committee that would have clarified that to make sure that the counties were fully reimbursed. And maybe if either the author or the Secretary of State, Simon, could comment on that. I don't know that the counties have ever been stuck with a general election or a state primary bill, but apparently they're nervous about that. So if you could comment on the probability of this language ever being implemented, I guess would be the basic question.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson and members. I understand the nervousness, particularly because we're talking about fiscal years 19 and 20, and there's no guarantee what the legislature is going to do going into those two fiscal years. It's not one, but two biennia away. So I understand the nervousness. That said, this is pretty good language. I mean, we're planting a flag here with reimbursement amounts, with a system here modeled on another system that has worked, the HAVA disbursement system, that I think they are comfortable with. They can speak better for themselves than I can speak for them. I can tell you that we've been in constant touch throughout this session on this bill with them. And I think part of the nervousness has to stem from the fact that these are 2016 amounts, and who knows what the real cost will be in 2019 and 2020. So all we can do in an honest way is say what the costs are going to be today. But the good news is that if this bill passes, the legislature has three more years to make tweaks in the 17, 18, and 19 sessions to make any kind of tweak, amendment, change, et cetera, on any of this. And so that's good news. And I suspect that if they continue to be nervous, and I don't blame them in terms of the inflation that tends to creep in, then in, for example, the 2019 session, these numbers could be updated, theoretically.
Yeah, and Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I don't happen to be on government op, but I understand that's where an amendment was offered to basically guarantee payment, as I understood the gist of the amendment. That was an attempt to resolve the county concerns. But at any rate, the bill has still time to move forward, but apparently that's one issue that the counties are concerned about.
Representative Davids, then Garofalo. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a pretty good bill. I do hope that the chair and Chair Anderson S. will be able to meet with the majority leader. I do have the same concerns that Chair Anderson S. has. I think that overall it's a very good bill, but I do think there are tails that affect Chair Anderson S.'s budget. And, you know, if we went down to just two committees, rules and ways and means, and taxes, I might support that. But with just rules and ways and means, I do have a little problem with that. So I hope, and I know you're good for your word, Mr. Chairman, that you will work through that. I don't know if it goes to the floor and then to rules and then maybe a special stakeholder finance meeting or something like that. But Chair Anderson S. brings out a very good point that it does affect future stakeholder finance budgets, and so I think we need to somehow have that looked at. I'm looking forward to providing any help I can with that, but I think it's a good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Davids. And yes, I do have some of the same feelings you have, and it will, as I understand it, automatically be kicked over to rules upon referral to the General Register, and so then I think we can talk to the Majority Leader about it. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I want to thank Representative Sanders for his work on this bill. Elections bills are never easy, particularly when we have such a rabid partisan Secretary of State to deal with. So I want to thank you for your work on this matter. And also I want to thank the Secretary of State as well as the members of both parties in this. Representative Sanders, with regards to our existing caucus system, what changes are you proposing to our for the caucuses that exist in terms of scheduling, administration, recording of activist information? What changes are you making in the bill with regards to caucuses?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, we are not changing anything that has to do with the current caucus structure, although we are hoping that the parties will agree to hold caucuses right around the time of the presidential primary. But outside of that, we're not attempting to step in and have any other effects on the current caucus system.
Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. So just to be clear, the party-building activities, the election of delegates, none of that stuff, you're not interfering with any in any way, shape, or form with that portion of the current caucus system.
Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chair and Chair Garofalo, no. Not directly, anyway.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if this bill were to become law as it is, as I understand it, the party preferences of people who voted in the primary would become public. So is there any thought being given or anything in the bill that would notify people who are going to be voting that that would in fact happen? Because in my experience door knocking, there are many Minnesotans who are very nervous about telling anyone what their party preference is. And many times, you know, I would canvass and people would just say to me, I'm not going to tell you. It's personal. It's private. And it's my sense that there is probably a fair number, of Minnesotans. Now, we know that if they now go to a caucus, they are giving away their information. But I think our what we're all sort of expecting here is that if we went to a primary system, we would be making that available to many more people. And so what would be done to let people know that, in fact, this would be different than what we do now? You know, we don't register by party. People go and they vote in a primary. Nobody knows who they voted for, which party they chose.
Secretary Simon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Livermore. Sorry, I was just conferring with someone, so I didn't hear all of that.
So I'm wondering, Mr. Chair and Secretary Simon, I'm wondering whether or how we're going to notify Minnesotans that the rules are changing with regard to people being, of their party preference being made public.
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Livermore. To my knowledge, there's nothing extra or in the bill that says that. Just as with most other elections changes, there haven't been. But there is language when you register to vote, whether in person or online, that makes clear that, in a general way, your voting record and other associated bits of information will be public. So people are on notice there. But no, there's nothing specifically as to this one change. It's my understanding that the bill does not do that.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so to Secretary Simon or any of the other testifiers, what would be your thought about maybe being more explicit about that if we were to go to this kind of a system?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Martin.
I think it's important to remember that this is not a primary election. This is a nominating contest for the political parties. And as such, it is important for the political parties to be able to maintain their ability to make sure that the people participating in that process do, in fact, generally agree with the general principles of the political party. This is not, to Representative Carlson's point earlier, this is not a closed primary or even anything close to a closed primary. It is an open primary. You can decide day of which ballot you're going to choose. However, it's important for the political parties to make sure that there's no mischief that occurs. And right now in the current caucus system, when you show up on caucus night, when you sign in, most people may not know this, but you are indeed signing an affirmation, a party affirmation that says for both parties that you generally agree with the principles of the political party. As Secretary Simon said, there's no one there policing that per se, but it's important for compliance with both the DNC and RNC rules on how we do our nominating contests that we do have some sort of party affirmation there and a party designation. We're not suggesting that this model be extrapolated out to regular primaries or that this is a precursor for party registration. But you can imagine a situation in 4 years when there's a party in power in the White House and they don't have a primary on their side and the other party does. That if we didn't have any sort of party affirmation or party designation, it would, in fact, set up a situation where you could have mischief being played in our nominating contest. And so both parties have pretty stringent rules on that piece. And so I guess to your question, we would be in favor of making sure everyone knows that your ballot is going to be part of the public record. We have no problem with that. But both parties, and I can speak for Chairman Downey here, would we would not be able to support any bill that moves forward that strips out the party affirmation or the party designation piece that is currently written in this bill.
Representative Lee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Chair Martin, I'm glad you kind of finally got around to my question, because I thought that you were kind of going off on something that I wasn't really questioning. Mm-hmm. But I do think that if we're changing the rules to the degree that now people's party preference is going to become public should they choose to vote in this primary, we're calling it a primary, I don't know what else we'd call it, but if we're going to change the rules to that degree, I would think that many Minnesotans would like to know in a very clear way that they are, in fact, giving their party preference. And I know many people don't mind doing that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps we could say that if they're going to vote in a party primary, they shouldn't mind doing that, because they're choosing to, you know, say, I'm with this party, I'm going to help choose their nominee. But I think it would be, at this point, with the way we've conducted elections up to now, somewhat of a violation of expectations for many people, and that's what my concern is, that if we're going to change the rules on Minnesotans about what gets released publicly, that we at least give them the option to know that ahead of time.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Marks, if I might.
Sure,
Marks. Mr. Marks, the discussion we were having earlier about tails, if this law were passed as it is, how would that be handled under the forecast?
Mr. Marks.
By MMB.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. The bill as drafted would have no effect on the forecast. The fiscal note says that shows the Secretary of State having a cost of $111,000 in fiscal 2019. What had been referenced, that the Senate did add language to their version of the bill that actually increased the base for the Secretary of State's office in fiscal 2019 by $111,000. So the Senate version, we would track $111,000 of additional spending in fiscal 2019. Unless that amendment got added to this bill, we would not do that for this bill. The Secretary of State would have to make the case next session, when the budget for the Secretary of State's office is being considered, that they need additional money to prepare for the fiscal 2020 presidential primary.
It's just so I'm clear, Mr. Chairman, so then that $111,000 would not be included in the forecast when we move into the primary election year, unless we did the same thing that the Senate did.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, if the House language prevailed, you're correct, it would not be. But it would be an issue that would likely need to be determined in the 2017 session, when appropriations are being made for fiscal years 2018 and 2019. And presumably the Secretary of State's office would raise that issue when their budget's being considered, that they now have to be ready to implement a primary, and they need the $111,000 to do that.
So that, you're Mr. Chairman, it would be included in the forecast then, if I understand what you're saying.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, it will not be included in a forecast until the legislature either puts language in directing it to be in the forecast, which is what the Senate bill now does, or until an appropriation is made in the 2017 session to do so.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Marks. I just wanted to be clear on just how that would be handled with a future forecast, being that there is a tail.
Representative Sanders, I just want to make sure I'm clear, or Secretary Simon, on the whole closed primary issue. So just the first election is in 2020, so someone, there's no data out there at this point on what your party preference is for the average voter, other than, I guess, the caucus records. So a person can declare which party they are going to vote with and get the proper ballot either on election day or on the day they come in and get their absentee ballot before election day. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And then, Representative Sanders, then at that point, as I understand it, that data will be reported in the Secretary of State's office. It will be available to people. Now, in 2024, if a person shows up on Election Day, and let's say they had voted as a Republican in 2020, but now they want a Democrat ballot, can they get a Democrat ballot on Election Day in 2024?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Otherwise, I think it's time to take up the A4 amendment. Representative Garofalo moves the A4 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And again, I do want to thank stakeholders who worked on this bill going forward. I also want to thank those members of the DFL who have assisted me with the drafting of this amendment. Quite simply, members, what this amendment does is it gets government out of the business of recording what party people vote for, plain and simply. Under the bill as it's drafted right now, as the chairman just mentioned in his questioning, a person is allowed to vote in either party. That's the tradition we've had in Minnesota. There's a reasonable debate about whether we should have an open or closed primary system. That's not what this bill is about, that's not what this amendment is about. We have an open primary in this bill as it exists, and with this amendment we will continue to have an open primary. What this says is that the party that you choose to vote for in your presidential primary, that's not going to be public information. We're not going to have the government record that information. We're not going to have the government make that available to the public, just like we do right now. In addition, you've heard about the Secretary of State referenced the there's not going to be any principal police going around and verifying that when you sign a statement saying that you agree with these principles. Same thing here. That's a really it's a non-enforceable clause. It really shouldn't belong there. Other states don't have that requirement. And so, members, what this really is it conforms the presidential primary with our existing primary law. It does not record voters' preferences of which party they belong to, make that information public, and I would ask for members' support.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think that, this is probably the largest point of discussion with this bill. As we've kind of had some discussions earlier, and as Representative Carlson said, this leans more towards the opened or closed. However it is, it's somewhat of a hybrid currently in the bill. I will say that, in speaking with the parties, which we have obviously a representative here today that can discuss the chairman's point of view, I think the parties have been fairly clear and insistent that this is language that they need to support the bill. So clearly, this is something that the committee needs to contemplate. I will say the one thing that I do agree with is that as much as possible, we would like Democrats choosing and having the loudest voice in who the Democrat nominee is and Republicans having their say in who the Republican nominee is for President of the United States. But clearly this is a discussion to be had in the direction that Minnesota goes to move forward. And I guess we'll see where the discussion the committee takes it.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to maybe a question to the author. Would the party still maintain the lists, and would candidates have access to the list of voters, or are you just saying, we're not going to collect any data on these primary voters, and no one would have access to it? I guess I wanted some clarity on that.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, we would treat primary voters the way we treat primary voters today. So, for example, when you go into a caucus system right now, it is correct. You sign a name, you sign a pledge, and then the party retains that information.
Correct.
Now, that information, as we discussed earlier in testimony, that caucus process is not changing. The difference here is that we're moving to a government-run election, and certainly it is for partisan endorsement, but now we're talking about what has been traditionally private data, or at a minimum, data that's held by the party. Now that becomes public, and there's no restrictions. This is, as the Secretary of State testified earlier, which party ballot you request is now going to be public information. I don't think Minnesotans like that idea. I know I don't like the idea. There's a reasonable debate about going to an open versus closed primary, and I understand those trade-offs. But this proposal seems to do, the bill it's drafted around seems to do the worst of both worlds, where it would force people to publicly declare a ballot but at the same time frame have an open primary. And so the party building activities are going to be left alone. Those are going to be retained. This is just a matter of whether government's going to collect this information. I don't think they should.
Thank you. Other discussion to the A4 amendment? Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair and representatives, I just want to go on the record again. Chairman Downey, myself, our lawyers, National Party officials, and Representative Sanders and Senator Rest in the Senate have been working diligently on putting forward a proposal that would comply with all of our rules and provisions at the national level. Again, it's important to note that this is not a primary election as such. It is a nominating part of our party nominating process. And as such, we still need to comply with our national party rules. If this provision, if this amendment were adopted and moved forward, both parties, and I can speak for Chairman Downey on this, would be in direct opposition to this. We do not. We would be in non-compliance with our national party at that point. It's important for us to move forward in the spirit that we have here, which is to make sure that the bill as crafted is flexible enough to still allow us to remain in compliance with the national party, and also to make sure that there's integrity in the process of nominating our candidates. As I've heard other representatives mention, we don't want people, Representative Sanders said it very clearly, we don't want Republicans coming into the Democratic side and monkeying with our process, just like you don't want Democrats coming in and monkeying with your process. As much as possible, we need to remain and maintain some integrity in this. And the party affirmation piece is important to that. Making sure that people know when they take a ballot, they're generally in agreement with our party principles. And the second piece is having it recorded which ballot you chose, so that we can, in fact, verify whether or not people who are participating in our process should be participating in our process. And I would just caution folks to think, again, in 4 years, one party is going to be in control of the White House and the other isn't. This is really an important piece of this, and I know this is where there is some divergence, but this is one opportunity, this legislative session, where there seems to be some very strong bipartisan support. And the reality is to Representative Garofalo's point, there are trade-offs. We had 206,000 people in the DFL caucuses who came out. They were crammed into an hour and a half voting window. Many voices weren't heard. Thousands of people on the DFL side, and I'm sure on the Republican side, were disenfranchised. And moving this forward would make sure that more voices are heard in this process, and we want that. But at the same time, we need to make sure that our process is our process and that we maintain the integrity of it, and it is still a party nominating process. And both chairs are adamant about this provision, and both parties are adamant about this, and we would be strongly opposed to seeing this move forward.
Before I recognize Representative Liebling, I want to say that after consulting with Mr. Stone, I understand that the bill actually did make deadline to Ways and Means, and so if it was referred to the floor, it would not necessarily go to the Rules Committee. And so I'm going to amend my motion that the bill be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is a difficult issue because there are a lot of important considerations on all sides. So the question I have probably for you, Chair Martin, is what the other states are doing. I mean, there are some states that have open primaries. So if these are rules, let me just say, I mean, it's completely understandable why the parties would want access to this information. Totally understandable. What are these other states doing? Are they complying with the national rules then? Is it that they have party registration? Is that what makes the difference? Or how is it that we have open primaries in some states?
Representative Sanders or Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, all I can say is there are states, like Wisconsin, I believe, they do have an open primary. I don't know exactly how and where they came into line and how long that process has been ongoing. I have been contacted by both of the chairs and at least the Republican Party attorneys that say that open primaries do lean towards the party not, what's the correct term, not
being in compliance.
Not being in compliance and not allowing their delegates to cast their vote. So, you know, I don't exactly know how the other parties either, A, get away with it or choose that. Perhaps Mr. Martin can help, you know, at least through the DNC. But I will say, at least as of today, the party, at least the Republican Party, is very staunch on making sure that there is some sort of coalescence around the party that you're voting for, again, to make sure that the, you know, Republicans are choosing their nominee as well as the Democrats choosing their nominee for president.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, every state is unique in how they handle this, and including in many of those states where they have open primaries. But I can say generally what we found is in that most of those states where they do have open primaries, they do have party registration. So you can indeed verify if people are voting. You can go back and look at the registration rolls to see whether or not the majority of people voting in your nominating process were indeed you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, et cetera. So, but I don't think that's true of every state where you have an open primary, so I can't speak to every instance there. But I will say that Representative Sanders is correct that our lawyers, the Republican Party lawyers, have reviewed this, and if we move forward without any sort of party designation, it could put our parties in a position where we would be in non-compliance with the national party rules.
Other discussion to the amendment? The author of the amendment, Representative Garofalo.
We'll be closing with this, right, Mr. Chairman? So just really quick, Representative Liebling, you're exactly right. I mean, you point out the flaw in the argument, and that is that states have open primary systems right now. If there was, we'd be seeing delegates getting tossed out left and right now if they weren't in compliance with the rules. So I think that's sort of a fake argument. Second of all, let's just be honest what this is all about. This is taxpayer-funded organizing lists for the state parties. I understand why the state parties want the information. We have to compete. We have to value two competing interests here. One is the organizing interests of the state party versus two, privacy and individual voter data for individuals. That's what we have to balance here. Now, keep in mind, we're not blowing away the caucus system. The state parties still have that organization ability. They still have the ability to retain that knowledge. In addition, we are in no way, shape, or form saying that Democrats can't interfere in the Republican primary or Republicans can't interfere in the DFL primary. That this bill does not address those points at all. If they wanted to, it would be a closed primary system, and it doesn't do it. And my closing point would be, Mr. Chairman, that clearly there's a lot of voter education that needs to take place on this. There needs to be an additional discussion. Clearly, as part of this process, the public is not aware this is happening. Right now, the House and the Senate language match up. I think it would be wise for the House to take a different route so at least this conversation continues so it doesn't enter conference committee as a settled issue. And so with that, I would ask for member support of this amendment.
Seeing no other discussion, all in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted.
Division.
All right. All in favor of the A4 amendment, raise your hands. All opposed, raise your hands. All right, thank you. There being 10 ayes and 13 nays, the chair's hearing is not good today, and the amendment is not adopted. All right, Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I had those nays, too, where my hearing wasn't the best, but...
But it was close. It was a close vote.
I do have a question on the process. Would your intent, and I'm looking at the fact that there's 2 weeks that remain, and you just changed your motion to re-refer it to state government finance. Now, you've got to sign the report. Will you be able to sign that report today because there isn't really any change? And it could theoretically then, if you signed it today, I shouldn't say theoretically, but if you did and turned it into the front desk, it could be referred to state government finance yet today.
That would be my hope, Representative Carlson.
My concern is the timing, so that Representative Anderson gets it early enough to call a hearing, and it can be, I assume at that point, being that it's been to Ways and Means, it would not need to come back here. Or would your intent be that it would have to come back here after state government finance?
Representative Carlson, I would not think it would have to come back here unless there were some amendments that were added in state government finance that somehow affected fiscal implications, which I don't think I'd anticipate.
Yeah, that would be if I were still sitting there, Mr. Chairman, my take on it then as well. Would it need, maybe this is a question of Mr. Marks or Mr. Stone, would it need to go to rules then from state government finance, being it's a fiscal committee? I assume it can go right to the floor.
Mr. Stone or Mr. Marks, any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, my impression was that it would have to go to rules because only Ways and Means is exempt from the deadlines. However, that's a discussion that can be held down the line.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, even though it's already been to Ways and Means, that's what puts it into the gray area. I don't happen to have the rule book here in front of me. But anyway, the main point is that there's still time if we move in a timely manner for it to get up onto the House floor. So thank you.
Representative Sanders, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I urge member support. We look forward to a hearing in state government finance.
Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3549 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 3549
Chair and members.
Is referred to State Government Finance. Okay, and members, we're probably going to be meeting in this committee Wednesday after session to take up some other calendar bills. And for members who are on the conference committee, we're meeting at 1 o'clock, the Supplemental Finance Conference Committee, today in room 10, is it? I believe it's room 10. And there's also, members, I would remind you, we have a joint committee tomorrow morning at 8:30 with the Senate. In the Senate building, room 1200, to listen to NCSL and talk about how targets are set in other states. And I'd really encourage you to come. There won't be any votes taken or anything like that, but I think that this will be a really interesting hearing. I know that many people have been frustrated with the way targets are sometimes set around here, and this will be an interesting hearing to hear how other states do it. With that, we are adjourned.